to us as parents to teach boys how to become men and girls how to become women and be respected. And what you put out is what you get back. And that's with everything. So it's how you carry yourself. Yes, of course, be professional, but it's okay to be sexy and beautiful, and you can still know sports and be amazing at your craft and get respect by asking the right questions. It's, there's a time and place for everything, but I think it's, you have to own who you are and know that from early on. And I think self-worth for me as a parent is the number one thing I'm trying to teach my child, is to value yourself. And to value yourself, you have to be proud of who you are on a daily basis.
Welcome to Ballers with Babies. I'm Mark Willard. Today, we know so much about what athletes and sports personalities do, but not so much about who they are, what makes them tick. What's life like the moment the stadiums and TV cameras go dark? Most go home to their families. We want to know what that after-hours experience is like. Ballers with Babies explores their upbringing, their home life, how it's affected by their high-profile job, and how that high-profile job is affected by the home life. On Ballers with Babies, we talk to some of the most interesting names in sports and find out how they're even more interesting than we realized. And don't worry, diehard fan, we'll get to the important sports questions as well. This is your favorite people like you've never heard them before. I hope you enjoy. All right, let's get her in here. Jill Arrington on Ballers with Babies. You, of course, know her as a sportscaster. But I know her as Tiffany Arrington. You know what? Why can you explain that for everyone? Because it's on your bios everywhere. Like, how did you become Jill Arrington?
I know, it's so weird. So, okay, I'm 25 years old, and I move out to Los Angeles, and I have this big meeting with Fox Sports about a job on Fox NFL Sunday. Pretty big job,
right.
And it was before I had been on television. I had only been producing behind the scenes before that, and they're like, "So now about your name." And I'm like, what about my name, Tiffany Arrington? And they're like, well, you know, a blonde Tiffany on the sidelines. I don't know. It sounds a little too like Alexis Carrington from that show Dynasty, like unattainable. And you need something down to earth. I was like, you know what? You can call me Bob. Just give me the job. So someone came up in the room with the name Jill, and it just stuck from there. So I've been Jill Arrington. It's just a stage name.
And so how often does it get used? I mean, does your family call you Jill or they call you Tiffany?
No. Oh, no. It's great because I know by what people call me, how I know them. So I'm Tiffany to my family, my daughter, everyone at the school knows me as Tiffany. And then if I'm at work or around work people at a sporting event, I go by Jill. And so it's just nice because you know how people know you. But depending on the name they call you.
All right, you mentioned your daughter. Let's hear about her. Of course, the only job more important than sportscaster is mom. So name and age of your daughter.
Okay, so I have a daughter, Presley Kate, and she's now 13 years old. I have a teenager, Mark.
Okay, can you explain this to me? Because I have a daughter who's turning 9 tomorrow, and all I keep hearing is that age 13, for the daughters is just like the biggest mind bleep that anyone ever goes through. So what is it like?
Well, for me, so far, so good. I have the sweetest child. I haven't had to deal with any of that quite yet. She hasn't completely hit puberty. It's coming, and I can see a little bit of, like, you know, a little snippy attitude here and there. So I know it's coming. But so far, I've been pretty lucky. I think the main thing is just the dialogue you have with your kids and the relationship that you establish with them as a toddler, and how you handle their tantrums then is how they're going to give them back to you now. So if you handled them well when they were toddlers, I hear you're going to be okay as teenagers, because it kind of, you go back to that relationship.
Yeah, this is so fun for me. I'm so excited to get the female perspective on all of this stuff. By the way, did you know that you are the first female guest on Ballers with Babies?
Yes. I love it.
This is a big deal.
Thank you. I'm honored.
Yeah. So what is it like to be a mom in the sports world?
You know, it's changed a lot. I have to say, I stopped working on national sports television because I was pregnant and had a baby. Now you don't have to do that. And I don't know that I had to then, but I definitely felt the pressure. I had a contract at the time with CBS, and I was covering the SEC sidelines and traveling every week. And one of the things in my contract said, you can't alter your body without permission or without,
wow,
you know. And so I had taken over for Michelle Tafoya, who had had a baby and, you know, had stopped working for a little bit. And it's just different now. You know, now Sam Ponder has taken one of her first children on the road with her to game day every week. Like, right. That was unheard of when I was working. So it's changed a lot, thankfully. But yeah, it's a struggle because, you know, with sports comes travel. And it's hard to travel with a baby while you're nursing. I had Presley in between football season, so I gave up a contract to have a baby, and then I took on a contract actually while I was pregnant, and I explained to ESPN, just so you know, full disclosure, excuse me, I'm having a baby, right. And they're like, well, when are you having? I said, June, and they're like, perfect, you'll be back by August. I'm like, okay. So it was a great job opportunity to be the, you know, one of the first women on game day, and I took the job because I didn't want to regret not taking that opportunity, but I was very concerned about how I was going to balance the two. She was 11 weeks old, and I went back on the road 6 days a week, and it was brutal. Mm. I would take red eyes to stay home in California as long as possible to go to my games. But, you know, I'm crying on the airplane. I'm exhausted. I'm nursing. I have the pump with me. It's not fun to have huge boobs on TV that are leaking, you know. So it's a lot on a woman. And then you just miss the bond. You know, you miss them. Are they going to roll over while you're on the road? And, I mean, dads go through the same thing. It's not just women. But it is tough. And I chose to go back quickly, and I had my mom's help, thank goodness, so I was comfortable leaving her for those 6 days, but it broke me, and I quit. It totally broke me. I couldn't do it. My heart was at home. As much as I loved game day, and when I would land in those cities, it was so much fun, and I loved covering the games with the guys, but I missed my daughter, and I said, you know, I had a baby to raise her, not for my mom to raise her. So for me personally, I couldn't do it. I quit working for 5 years to stay home with my little girl and be a mom.
Yeah, I mean, I hear you. I hear everything on that, and it's interesting. You know, you mentioned that you took over from Michelle Tafoya, and Michelle's amazing, but by the same token, I remember you when you were doing those SEC games. Like, to me, that was kind of the birth of the attention-getting sideline reporter. I think you know what I mean by that. And I wonder, like your daughter, you know, when you watch the evolution of this position and everything, does she know who Jill Arrington is? I mean, you were a trailblazer in that position.
I don't think she knows that I was a trailblazer. She definitely knows and sees me on the air now and what I'm doing, and knows that you know, I'm a career woman and that I know sports and that I can talk sports, and she's very proud of that. And I have a whole family that's on television in the movie business. So for her, it's not that foreign or a big deal. It's just work and what we do. But hopefully one day as she gets older and does study about it, she will see that I broke a few molds. And, you know, in that light, I mean, yeah, it was different. I was asked on a daily basis in my job, like, how do you wear your hair long like that? Are they okay with that? And wow, you know, you look like this. Do you really know sports? And it was so weird to me because I grew up around sports. My dad was a quarterback in the NFL. I played college tennis. And when they would ask me these questions, I mean, I did give in and change my name. But when they would ask me questions about my appearance, I was like, what do you mean? This is what I look like. What do you mean? I play golf with my dad and all his NFL buddies. And it's very normal for me to walk up and talk to these Hall of Famers. Like, you know, I just approached it so differently. And I was glad that I was able to be me and be Tiffany, so to speak, you know, on the air and still know sports. And I'm proud of the fact that I was embraced. And, you know, Mark, the thing is, when you go into that business, and yes, it's male dominated, but like any male dominated business, whether you're a CEO of a Fortune 500 company, if you walk in the room and say the right thing and ask the right follow-up questions, the room realizes you know what you're talking about or not. That's kind of where you are noticed and whether you stay or not.
So where are we then on women in the sports industry achieving peace and equality and respect, in your opinion?
I think we're really close. I think the pay scale is way off. But I think as far as the respect goes, I don't think it's a big deal what a woman looks like anymore. I don't think, and that's been a long process, you know, to get past, oh, she's dressed too sexy. What do you mean? Like, you know, this is how she wants to dress. It doesn't matter. It's like as if a man wore a shirt that's a little tighter than this other man. Like, that was never talked about. But a woman wears a skirt a little tighter than another woman, it was like front page news. That shouldn't matter. You know, it's the questions you're asking. It's the job you're doing. So I think we've gotten past that. I think that women in the sports world is very accepted, that their knowledge is equal and accepted. And I just think we need to work on the pay scale a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. Now, and in the grander sense, I mean, who knows what Presley will go on to do, but basically what you're talking about right there, are these conversations that you have with her? Maybe is that still down
absolutely.
The road? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, at 13, yes. We talk about as she is getting more and more attention from boys, as she's getting older, and certain kind of girls in her class getting more attention than other kind of girls. I mean, this is life. Boys will be boys. And it's up to us as parents to teach boys how to become men and girls how to become women and be respected. And what you put out is what you get back. And that's with everything. So it's how you carry yourself. Yes, of course, be professional, but it's okay to be sexy and beautiful. And you can still know sports and be amazing at your craft and get respect by asking the right questions. There's a time and place for everything. But I think it's you have to own who you are and know that from early on. And I think self-worth for me as a parent is the number one thing I'm trying to teach my child.
Yeah.
Is to value yourself. And to value yourself, you have to be proud of who you are on a daily basis.
By the way, you mentioned having a lot of show business in the family. For those who don't know, Dakota Fanning is your niece. Are Dakota and Presley close? And what kind of role model has Dakota been for Presley?
Amazing. And they are. Presley is an only child. And so my nieces, it's actually Dakota and Elle Fanning, who's just as big of a
right.
movie star, if you will. They're sisters, and that's my sister's kids. And so they are like her siblings. They're 6 and 10 years older than her, but they live in the same town. Presley goes to the same high school that they went to. She's going to the same school. And so it's been amazing. And they've been great role models. And again, they've carried themselves in a way where they've been in that business since they were 2 and 6 years old. And now they're turning 20 and 24. So they've done pretty well keeping their, you know, their self-worth and their value and bringing to the table who they are and standing true to that. And I think that's what we should be teaching our children, boys and girls, is who do you want to be? Who do you want people to perceive you as? Who do you want to reach? What is your voice out there? And I think if you stay true to that every day and you don't do things for ulterior motives, you really stick to you, I think then that truth lives on.
Okay, what was your toughest parenting moment?
Woo, toughest parenting moment. Wow, that's tough. You know, one of the things that has been tough for me, because I'm competitive and in the sports world, so my daughter has picked up sports, right, early on. She played soccer in AYSO from 5 to about 12. And I was her coach in AYSO until she got to the club level, and then she started playing club soccer, and I was no longer her coach. And then she's also played tennis since she was about 7. And when she decided to give up soccer, it broke my heart. It was so hard to watch. She was having a club game, and she had been struggling, and I didn't feel like she was playing her best. And it was so hard to stay quiet and not be that bad parent and, like, berate your child for the moves they make on the field when you know they're just kind of mailing it in. And this isn't what I taught you, and why are you not doing this? And I paid for these private lessons, and what do you mean? You know, you're not going to – it's really hard because I know the line you're supposed to give your children is, I love to watch you play. And does it bring you joy? It brings me joy just to watch you and to just stay back and be supportive and proud no matter what and let them make their own decisions. So for me, that was the hardest when she came off the field one day and said, Mom, I'm done. I don't like this anymore. It crushed me, Mark. It crushed me. I was like, what do you mean? 6 years.
How am I going to live vicariously through you if you don't play, right?
Yeah. I mean, it was just more so like worry that, you know, she's an only child and she's giving up a team sport. Now she's just going to play an individual sport like tennis.
Yeah.
And is that enough? And, you know, can she just do one or, you know, shouldn't she continue with both? And all her friends are still playing and the exercise you get, I don't know. It just like was very hard. And also to not be angry about it and to be okay and let it go. And she's fine. That was like 3 years ago. Now she's won her tennis league all through middle school. She went undefeated and won the league championship, which I'm super proud of, in singles. And I don't know, will she play in college? Who knows? But she is enjoying it. That's her sport. And, you know, she values that and she identifies herself and is proud of that. And so am I. So it's hard. That's the hard part, is just letting it go, despite all the money you put into it and all the lessons. And when your kids aren't giving the best that you know they can, and understanding that and being okay with it is very difficult.
That's mama's influence, though, right? Tennis. That was your sport, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was my sport. It's funny, I introduced her to it at like 4 or 5. They have these little toddler tennis classes, and I thought it was a joke. And she went out there and just did not have an interest. You know, she just wasn't focused enough for it. And so we didn't, we stopped. And I thought at that time, she's horrible at tennis. She's never going to do it. I started at 3, and I was like playing matches at 5. And I was like, oh, great. She's never going to play. But, you know, it's just developmental. And so by 7, she was like, hey, I want to try it again. And I was like, okay, you know, you weren't so good at it before, but let's see. And then it just clicked. You know, the hand-eye coordination came together. It was all developmental. So I'm very excited she's picked that sport, because we can play together now. I mean, she beats me sometimes on a bad day.
Well, yeah.
No, she's great. And the sport's come so far from when I played, and the rackets and the spin and the way that they teach is so different. And she's loved it. I mean, she goes to UCLA tennis camp every summer, and now that's where she wants to go to school. She wants to be a Bruin. So, it's exciting to see what journey she'll take. But I think sports are so important for children and for their confidence. And I'm a big proponent of, I think sports really keeps her kind of out of the social media gossip and too much time on your hands where you're going to get in trouble. When she has practice and she's on a court or a field running, you can't pick up the phone. So for me, it's been great compared to maybe some other children who haven't played. I hear some of the stories they're going through with teenagers that I'm not having to deal with, because she's kept pretty busy on the tennis court and other activities.
Continuing with Jill Arrington on Ballers with Babies, you just mentioned it right there. I mean, one of the things that I think is so great about having an attachment to the sports industry, while also being the mom of a girl, sports can be, as you said, such a confidence builder, right? I mean, and girls, maybe even more so than boys, they need that during adolescence, at least in my opinion. So in what way do you use sports to help not only build her confidence, build your confidence over the years too, right?
Oh, 100%. I'm a huge, huge proponent of sports, especially for girls, for that reason, because it does. You know, you have to take ownership of something, especially team sports. You have a responsibility to your team, and even individually, you know, you don't like losing. I happen to have a very competitive child, so she doesn't want to lose, and so she knows what it takes to win, and so she knows she's got to practice her toss. She knows she needs to run some lines to get her quickness better with her footwork, and so it's the outcome that she wants, but it's the little things through the journey that she does that really build her up, so that when she does this extra training and then wins these tournaments, she knows it doesn't just happen. Like, she knows there's a reason for it, and it gives her purpose, and then it makes her want to get out there and practice more because she sees the payoff. And then also just being on teams with other kids, even on the tennis team, you know, it is a team sport when you play it in school, and it's just great because every match is a point, every game is an extra game for the total, and it's just... It just helps, I think, with that responsibility, and you take ownership of something that you're part of, that you don't want to let other people down, and not to mention the health aspect of it as these kids are growing, and, you know, all the sugar and the crap that's available, they want to eat healthier because they don't want it to slow them down. They want to feel better on the court because it gets hot in L.A., and when you're playing 4 or 5 hours and you're going to camp, you know better. As soon as you eat a crappy breakfast one day, it doesn't happen again because you can't make it through. So it's just, you don't even have to, like, be the mom telling them. They figure it out when they're competitive and they want to perform better in sports. It's a win-win.
So I feel like, unfortunately, I don't even need to ask if you consider yourself kind of part of the hashtag Me Too movement, looking the way you do, working in the male-dominated industry. I'm sure at some point or another, if not continually, I mean, you've dealt with inappropriate behavior, no?
Yep, almost every day.
Almost every day.
Yeah, it's certainly, I don't want to say... It comes with the territory, but it unfortunately has been the culture that's been built for generations. And I do think it's changing. And I think the key to making it change is having more women in executive positions, because it always starts at the top. And so if the executives of these companies are carrying their board meetings a certain way, then the people under them see that, and they carry their meetings a certain way, and then they hire their assistants a certain way, and then they hire talent a certain way. And that's what happens. So I think the more we get women in charge, it's been interesting, you know, a lot, most of the time in my business, I am the only female on a crew or in a newsroom or in, you know, in an office. For the most part, I mean, there's a makeup artist once in a while, or there may be a female editor once in a while. But for the most part, I oftentimes am the only woman. And it's interesting the way the dialogue can change when I walk in a room in the beginning. And then once they kind of get comfortable around you, it goes right back to that, quote, locker room talk.
Right.
And having grown up with a father who was a quarterback in the NFL, and like I said, having played golf with my dad and his buddies, you know, I've been around it a long time. And I'm not saying that I've accepted it, but I've definitely gotten used to it. And so for me, I fortunately haven't had any instances because of the strength I carry myself with and because of my self-worth. I personally haven't had any instances where I felt violated. And if an instance comes up or an opportunity comes up where I am approached in a way that I'm not comfortable with, I put them in its place real quick. And that's easy for me to say because that's my personality. That's very easy for me to do. Like, buddy, that's not going to happen. Like, put it back in your pants, not interested.
Yeah.
But for other women and other personalities, it's not as easy, you know, for them to speak up like that. And I've also turned down a ton of job opportunities because I didn't feel comfortable with the way it was proposed to me and the things that I felt like would come to it. I mean, there have been times I've turned down millions of dollars to be the face of certain things because of things that were attached to it that I wasn't going to be comfortable doing at certain points, and I knew that. And that's a decision you have to make, you know, and I was fortunate enough to see that ahead of time and make that decision and be completely happy with it. And I know that other people have made that decision and done things that they maybe regretted but are a lot farther along in their career, and maybe they're okay with it. You know, it's a decision you make in that moment, and it needs to change. It's not okay. I don't like having to deal with that, but it is part of life until it changes, until enough women get in charge and the culture changes.
That's amazing what you just said. And I, you know, I know you, so I know how much of a person of conviction you are. But what does it take? And I mean this also as a mom, like, because you're going to want this to filter down to Presley. What does it take to be able to do that? Have somebody is like, okay, we're going to offer you seven figures, and in your gut, you know, this isn't right. I'm turning around and I'm walking away.
I've asked myself that a lot because I do want my daughter to have that conviction, and that I think it just comes down to that self-belief and a bigger power that you're going to be okay, that you don't need. Like, if you go into a job desperate and needing it, it's not going to be as good as if you go into a job knowing that you can really help a company change things around, but if they don't see it, you're going to do it somewhere else. And I don't know what it takes to get to that place, but that's where I was at my age, at 25, at 27, at 30, at 32. When I was going through those highs of my career, I was like, you know what? I'm not going to sacrifice my morals or to be someone I don't want to be a part of something just for more money or just for more fame or just for me, I wanted to continually be me and be proud of Tiffany. And, you know, I just like to think ahead, and with my family be proud of me in this position, and, you know, would I be okay speaking on a show in this behalf? Because you have to understand, Mark, I'm sure you remember, a lot of the television shows that invited, sports shows that invited women, were very sexual, the woman's role.
Yeah.
Became very sexualized. And I wasn't comfortable with that, you know, and so and I was okay with the women who did want to. That's 100% fine for them, you know. But that, for me, it just wasn't who I was. And I could have probably done that. And I could have played that sexy side role and caught up with the guys. But that's not what I wanted to do. So even though I knew I could have done it and taken the money, and it probably would have helped me in ways of, like, giving me more financial stability to go ahead and turn down something else, to wait on something else, you know, and that kind of thing. I just personally didn't, that wasn't who I was. So I was like, well, and even now I get opportunities to things. I'm like, well, if I didn't do it when I was 25, it looked amazing. Why am I going to do it now? You know, at 45. But, you know, it's just, it's something that I hope I'll teach Presley. Like, listen, you know, Know your self-worth. Know what you're bringing to the table. Believe in that. And if they don't see it for that, move on and find another opportunity. You have to believe in your truth.
You've mentioned a couple of times golfing with your dad. By the way, are you still golfing?
I am. I am still golfing. I'm playing golf and tennis still. It's awesome. Don't play as much golf, as you know, as I'd like to because of our schedules with our kids' activities and work. But I do. Yeah, I do still play golf. I just went to the Genesis Open and saw Tigers come back, and that was fun to watch. And I cover it. It just gets you jonesing once you start watching these guys play so amazing.
What's a good round for you today, by the way?
I'm shooting in the low 80s.
Okay. Okay.
On a good, you said good round, you know.
Okay.
My average is in the 90s, but good rounds when I'm on it. Yeah, low 80s.
Not bad, not bad. And by the, you know, it's interesting because I do take my daughter. We don't play a lot of rounds. She's only 8 years old, about to turn 9, but we'll go to the range. She plays basketball. I try to play that with her. And I'm listening to you talk about golfing with your dad when you were younger, and it's making me think about what I'm doing with my daughter Ella right now. Like, what did those experiences do for you?
Oh, it was everything. I mean, I didn't start playing golf with my dad till high school. I played softball for 12 years, and he was my coach, which is kind of what I thought I would do with Presley with the soccer. And then I started playing tennis really young like she has, and that was your individual sport that you can train and hit them balls. And, you know, it's just being out there with them and the dialogue you get to have, and when they're wanting to quit and you can push them a little farther, and it's the conversations about your body and working out together and just things that come up that they're comfortable talking to you about. You'd be surprised. But my daughter, in fact, has golf tryouts for the golf team this coming week, and we were out all weekend hitting balls, and we played around together. And, yeah, I mean, there's moments when, you know, she's getting frustrated. Well, don't tell me what I'm doing wrong. Tell me how to do it. You're not telling me how to do it. You're just telling me what I'm doing wrong. You know, it's not easy, but you're still having time with them, and you're working on your parenting and learning, and they're learning, you know, how to be a kid and how to enjoy a sport. So as long as you're both growing and learning and honest with each other and, okay, you're right, I'm sorry. You know, it goes both ways. It's an amazing bond. Sports is everything.
All right, big finish with Jill Arrington on Ballers with Babies. Let's stick to sports. And, you know, you, as we talked about, you originally made your name in college sports. It feels like the NCAA right now is on the verge of crumbling with everything that's going on. I don't know if it will or not, but how would you fix the issues going on surrounding college sports with the agents and the coaches and the schools and even the NCAA itself seemingly all breaking the rules?
You're asking me to fix it?
Yeah, what? Fix it. Fix it right now.
That's a heavy question.
Yeah, we're going to really blow. I mean, everyone's going to listen once they realize that you could just fix it right here, Jill.
Right, okay. It is so disheartening to see because I intimately know so many of these stories and these athletes and these names that have come out over the years that have done different things. And when you, and Mark, you do too, you know both sides of it. It's really difficult. I know the colleges are trying to keep it clean and offering the scholarships and, you know, how can we make it fair so there's not huge monopolies so Alabama doesn't win everything. And, you know, I see what they're trying to do, but I think that they've now taken it too far to where now who's the corrupt one? And so you got to shine a light on both sides and find some common ground to not take away from the love and joy of the sport. And that's what's happening right now is that, you know, the real competition and the fairness is being diluted because of the corruption on both sides. So, you know, it's difficult for a kid whose mom has, you know, a cyst in her mouth and a cavity and can't get dental work. And this kid's out here balling his ass off and making money for the school. And, you know, one of the boosters wants to give him a couple hundred dollars for his mom. You know, it's just, there's got to be some more common sense. I think that's the main thing. There's got to be common sense. I know rules are rules and you have to have that, but it's not working. I don't have the answer, but I want to get back to the joy of sport and the equality of it. And if it's got to be equal for the players on the court, it's got to be equal for the men in the suits in the boardroom.
You know, you talk about that joy and the love of sport. I know you have it for your alma mater, the U. Are they about to be back?
I think we are back. I mean, the journey back has been so fun. I mean, we cracked the top, what, two? I was so excited. I mean, I knew we weren't as good as you know, when we were on top. I knew it was a bit of a facade this year. But we're working our way back. I think Mark Richt has been a great influence there. The kinds of recruits we get down there, it's just a special, different kind of athlete that goes to the University of Miami. I love the swagger. I like it better when we can back it up and win championships, and I really do. I think that that Mark's got it going, and I think on the basketball court, too. I mean, watching what our guys are doing right now, it's amazing, and it's fun, and when the U is in the mix, sports is just better off.
You also mentioned recently going to watch Tiger play. Tiger is still polarizing, even though I feel like right now everybody's kind of rooting for him, not so much for the sake of him, but for the sake of the sport of golf entirely. So where's your rooting interest with regard to him, and how possible do you think it is that he's going to win something again this year?
I mean, you know, we're all sinners. We all have our issues, yep, right? And, yep. You know, and he's paid his dues mightily. I mean, you know, he's been through a lot, and it's up to him if he can pull it together and be the man that his kids need him to be. And that's on Tiger. I mean, everything Tiger did is on Tiger and his personal life. As far as the sport goes, the sport's way better off with him. And I think, you know, for this upcoming generation to hear that story and to see the redemption is actually a great story for them to see. Look what he lost. Look what it cost him. He couldn't, you know, break 80. He couldn't even play. Like, and now he's back. That's a story. And I think that's inspiring for all of us. And so, yeah, I think the competitor and all of us want to see Tiger back and competing, and it does make it more fun. Now, whether he wins again, you know, it's all mental, I think, at this point, because his body's back. It was good to see him swing the club like that again.
Bless you, Jill. This has been fantastic. I really, really appreciate it. The female perspective is needed more often on every single level. So thank you so much.
Oh, this was so much fun. I love sports, and I love seeing more women just crushing it. So thanks for the opportunity to come on. Talk to you soon.
Absolutely. Thank you.